From Lebanon to Uniontown, Greenville to Pittston, this is a Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Commonwealth Court has ruled no excuse mail-in voting and ballot drop boxes are unconstitutional. What impact might that have on this year's elections? Ken Cuccinelli from the Election Transparency Initiative is here to explain. With so many people working from home, what impact has that COVID-inspired trend had on the office space vacancy rate? Frank Amrad and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And it has been 1 year since Congress passed the American Rescue Plan, designed to help the nation recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Has it worked? Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has the answer on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Ken Cuccinelli of the Election Transparency Initiative in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania Republican Party met last week and decided not to endorse candidates for statewide office this year. After a month of regional caucus meetings and straw polls, no candidate broke away from the large field of candidates seeking the GOP nominations for U.S. Senator, Governor, and Lieutenant Governor. Those nominations will now be decided in the primary election currently scheduled to be held in May. On the Democratic side, Montgomery County Commissioner Valerie R. Cush has ended her campaign for the U.S. Senate seat, being vacated by the retirement of U.S. Senator Pat Toomey. That sets up a primary battle largely between Congressman Connor Lamb and Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. The Legislative Redistricting Commission has approved final maps for the Pennsylvania State House and State Senate districts. The maps are heavily gerrymandered to benefit Democrats who controlled the map-making process. A court challenge is likely. Meanwhile, a Commonwealth Court judge has selected the new congressional district map developed by State House Republicans. The process is now before the state Supreme Court, which, though lacking in constitutional authority to do so, will make the final decision. Governor Tom Wolf delivered his last state budget address this past week, hitting on familiar themes like pouring billions more into public education. The Commonwealth is flush with federal stimulus money, and Democrats are anxious to spend it. But Republicans control the state legislature, and they're not wanting to bloat budgets that will have to be funded by state taxpayer dollars when the federal funding runs out. A new state budget must be passed by the end of June. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. No excuse mail-in balloting was used in the 2020 and 2021 elections, but now a panel of Commonwealth Court judges have ruled the process unconstitutional. The state Supreme Court will have the ultimate say, but for a look at how the major change in the election process occurred and where it may be headed from here, we turn to Ken Cuccinelli. Ken is national chairman of the Election Integrity Initiative. Ken, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Ken, our discussion today is going to be about Act 77. Now, I would venture to say most people don't know laws by their act number. So tell us a bit about tell us a bit about Act 77 and what it authorized in Pennsylvania.
Well, the key thing for the news this week is that it authorized no excuse absentee voting. The Pennsylvania state constitution explicitly bars mail-in voting except in a series of named exceptions. And they're common sense exceptions. They're what you'd expect to see. You're at work, for instance, when voting is taking place, that kind of thing. And as part of a deal back in 2018, the legislature created no excuse mail-in voting. And the Commonwealth Court this week, or last week, I guess, now, my days are running together, found, in my view, rather simply, that that was unconstitutional and in conflict with the very straightforward language of the Pennsylvania state constitution. So now it goes on to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, where you have had political rulings on other election matters happen before. But this one is kind of interesting because the language of the Constitution is so straightforward, and it's not the first time. I mean, there's prior case law on this. So one of the things about Pennsylvania's election law is it's old. In fact, I would say outdated. It's one of the things Seth Grove, one of your representatives, the guy who's leading the way trying to update it, points out all the time. Your election law in Pennsylvania really dates from like the 30s. But the Constitution is also quite clear on this point. And Act 77 rather blatantly violated it. And that's what the lower court found. And now it goes on to the Supreme Court. And we will see, frankly, do they make a legal decision or do they make a political decision? And I think there's kind of an open question of which one they'll do there.
Also, Act 77 authorized or at least opened the door for these ballot drop boxes. The ruling by the Commonwealth Court said they aren't constitutional either. So where does that leave us relative to these drop boxes?
For the moment, it doesn't undo anything that has already happened. So just let's be clear about this. This isn't really about, are we going to see any votes recounted from 2020? That's not what's going on here. What's happening here is how will elections in Pennsylvania be run going forward, including the primaries this year, which are coming up in just a couple of months? Right now, those drop boxes are not legal to use. And as the court found, they were never legal. So as things stand now, unless the Supreme Court rules very quickly and overturns the currently existing ruling, then there will be no drop boxes used in Pennsylvania until that's resolved. And unless and until the legislature goes through the constitutional amendment process, assuming the ruling holds up, to change that. I hope they wouldn't even do that because drop boxes I view as a very insecure part of an election arrangement. It's asking for trouble by using them, and better to just be rid of them and give people access to the elections offices.
You might want to talk a little bit further, and I think you bring up a very good point here, Ken. And this is not about the 2020 election. This isn't about trying to recount, trying to overturn it, none of those things. This is about going forward. And here in Pennsylvania, we have the very unique circumstance where we have an open seat for both governor and U.S. senator in the same year. Yep. And control of the U.S. Senate could depend on who is elected in Pennsylvania. So it's really important that we get this right. As far as all this legal maneuvering is concerned, this is more about the future, correct?
Absolutely. Again, this is a forward-looking undertaking. That's exactly what it's about, is what's going to happen in future elections, not what happened in past elections. And while some people would prefer to apply it backwards, that isn't the way elections work. Once they get finalized, that's over. And whether we like that or not is really quite secondary to how it actually works.
In addition to the fact, Ken, that Act 77 had unconstitutional components to it, the Supreme Court and the Bureau of Elections, which is under the Department of State in Pennsylvania, all issued a number of rulings that did things like extend the deadlines for ballots to be counted. Talk a little bit about the impact of, you know, even once you have a law, sticking to the law.
Pennsylvania is one of my case examples of this as a problem. I mean, you can have all the laws in the world, you can have the best ones in the world, but if your own people won't obey them, it doesn't matter. So, and you had a major problem with that in Pennsylvania in the 2020 election. It was kind of a case example across the country of how to break your own laws. Not that I'm advocating that, but I'm just identifying it as a major problem that arose in Pennsylvania. And it was very frustrating. What good is having a decent set of laws if people won't follow them? Meaning your own officials. I mean, it's incredible. People in Pennsylvania were breaking Pennsylvania law across the board, all over the place. Very frustrating.
We are talking with Ken Cuccinelli, who is national chairman of the Election Integrity Initiative. And Ken, looking beyond Pennsylvania, as we go around the country, can you talk about some of the steps that are being taken in various states that might be taken here in Pennsylvania as well to make sure that we do ensure that the election ends with a fair count and without all of these questions and controversies surrounding it?
What we're doing, and we're being supportive of it in Pennsylvania, but also states all over the country, is supporting things like equalizing voter identification with mail-in voting where it does exist in other states to in-person identification, supporting efforts to require voter identification, which, by the way, Americans of every partisan stripe and skin color, and you can break Americans down however you like to break people down. I'm not a big fan of breaking people down, but you can do that and find that we all support voter ID. Because it's just a common sense way to secure an election, and Americans get that. We all get that. It's not controversial among ordinary Americans, only among some elected politicians who happen to be rather radically left-wing. And that's it. Things like getting rid of ballot boxes. Ballot boxes are a security problem. And when I say security, I mean both. They open the opportunity for cheating, and they make tracking by ordinary citizens very, very difficult. And that's important to have confidence in the outcome of the election, to be able to see everything from start to finish. Ordinary citizens should be able to double-check what their government is doing and have confidence that they did it right, especially when it's elections.
You served as Attorney General in Virginia, and of course, Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, elected a Republican governor in a major political earthquake here last year. Did Virginia go down this path of allowing these types of ballots that can be delivered by mail with no excuse? And what efforts were taken in Virginia last year that made that election more fair?
I use it as an example because there were a lot of people after 2020 on the Republican side who were saying, oh, gosh, you know, no election. My vote doesn't matter because they're going to cheat no matter what. And we actually lost. Republicans lost the two U.S. Senate seats in Georgia on the January 5th, not 6th, 5th special election of 2021. The Loeffler and Perdue seats were lost. We know this for one reason. Because over 200,000 Republican voters decided not to vote because they believed their vote wouldn't matter, literally wouldn't count. And that was never true. Were there problems? Absolutely, there were problems. But did it zero out votes? Does it not matter that you vote? Absolutely wrong. Fast forward to the Virginia election. And in the last 2 years, the Democrats have got complete control of the Virginia legislature and governorship up to the last election. They made over 60 changes to our election laws. The Mark Eliases and the radical leftists were very happy with it. But what we did was we had thousands, literally thousands of Virginians step forward and say, I'm going to be an election official. And they created organizations and some national entities like ETI, where I work, Election Transparency Initiative, helped. But this was really a grassroots move in Virginia to train themselves as election officials. They went inside, not poll workers, not for the campaigns, and they actually ran the election. We recruited more new election workers in Virginia this year on the Republican side than any other year. And election workers are divided up by party in many states, including Pennsylvania. And this is something anybody listening to you and me can do. Anybody can go be an election official. If you're allowed to vote where you live, then you can be an election official. Go be trained. Run the election. Be the person counting the votes. If you're worried about cheating, are you worried about you? I doubt you are. Go participate. And in Virginia, we had a swarm of new election officials like never before. And we won with a Democrat set of rules with a lot of people watching. And it can be done anywhere, including Pennsylvania.
And we would point out that there will be the Pennsylvania Election Integrity Summit, which is going to be held on March 31st as a lead-in to the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. And if you're listening and you want to become one of those grassroots individuals who go out and make sure that our elections are conducted honestly and with integrity, go to paleadershipconference.org and you can come down here and be part of the Pennsylvania Election Integrity Summit. In the meantime, we have been talking with Ken Cuccinelli, National Chairman of the Election Transparency Initiative. Ken, tell us just a little bit about the initiative and where can folks go on the web to learn more?
So we're at electiontransparency.org, and I'm on Twitter. Yes, they haven't completely banned me yet, at Ken Cuccinelli. It's easy if you can spell Cuccinelli. It's phonetic in South Italy. We work all over the country. We're a joint project of the Susan B. Anthony List, the largest pro-life grassroots organization in America, and the American Principles Project, pro-family, socially conservative group. And both of them formed this project because they believe they have a winning message to win hearts and minds, and all they need is a fair playing field. And so they started the Election Transparency Initiative to advocate exactly for that, just a fair playing field. No advantage for either side. Just let Americans debate and argue the issues, and they believe on issues of life and family that they'll come out on top. And the last 20 years has shown that's the direction America's going, even with so many of our other problems. So we'd appreciate the support and help of anybody listening. And I would urge folks to participate in the summit coming up at the end of March and to sign up as an election official. Go inside, count the votes yourself. Don't complain about other people doing it.
Ken Cuccinelli of the Election Transparency Initiative. Ken, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure, as always.
As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, many workers have been doing their jobs from home rather than reporting to an office. Will this become a long-term trend, and what impact will it have on the office vacancy rate? Frank Amrat and Eric Montardi have this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Amrat. Your most recent brief, which is available at www.alleghenyinstitute.org, looks at the most recent statistics on the office vacancy rate. And today we want to talk about what you refer to in the brief as premium class A office space in the downtown Pittsburgh Central Business District. Can you give our listeners an idea of what the most recent vacancy rate was for that area?
Oh, absolutely. This kind of came up before the pandemic because back in 2013, Pittsburgh Central Business District Class A office space, now that's the premium office space, is divided between Class A and Class B. Everything else is Class B. It was 5.2% back in 2013, and then at the fourth quarter 2019, it had risen to 15.6%. And so that was a big jump. And then, of course, the pandemic hit, and it went to 18.1% by the first and second quarter of 2021. And then by the fourth quarter, it dropped down slightly to 17.6%. Now, we had looked at a handful of nine other cities in a sample, Austin, Boston, Charlotte, Cincinnati, Columbus, Dallas, Denver, LA, and Seattle. And Pittsburgh actually did fairly well, relatively speaking, to those cities. It was the fourth highest, or I guess fourth best vacancy rate, 17.6%. Boston, Charlotte, Cincinnati were a little bit better in our small sample. And so, you know, we looked at that, and then we looked at something called the net absorption rate, and that is how much of unleased space became leased or leased space become unleased, you know, depend. Because one thing to keep in mind is a vacancy rate only counts unleased space. It doesn't count unoccupied space. And to our surprise, Pittsburgh was one of the few CBDs in our sample where there was a positive absorption rate of Class A space. You know, people were moving in to the premium office building, but it was negligible. There was a little bit of movement in that rate. In the beginning of 2021, it was 18.1. Now it's 17.6.
Frank, one of the things that's woven through the briefs that has looked at the vacancy rate, obviously during COVID, has been people working from home, people changing the way that office work happens. Is there going to be a return to typical office work? And what do you think that portends for the vacancy rate for the Pittsburgh Central Business District?
The one thing the pandemic did was sprout this new work from home culture. What we're seeing is that's continuing. BNY Mellon is asking its employees to come back into the office in March, but they're encouraging a hybrid model where the employee can do some days at home and some days in the office. And so I think you're going to see that take shape going forward. And that's going to cause these firms to really reevaluate the amount of square footage that they actually need. And I could see them releasing some square footage and that vacancy rate starting to go up. We are now in a labor slanted market where the potential employee is now calling the shots. Philadelphia, which was not part of the original sample, but would be of interest to our listeners, especially out in the Philadelphia area, has a Class A vacancy rate at the end of 2021 of 13.6%, which is better than what Pittsburgh has going for it. But it too has a year-to-date negative absorption rate, which meant that lease space has become unleased in the Philadelphia area. About 766,000 square feet has become available that was not available earlier in the year. And so they're going to have the same issues as the bigger firms look to this work from home culture and whether or not they want their employees back in and how much they're going to office space they're going to really need going forward. Now, the one good thing Pittsburgh has going for it is that there's no new development of Class A or Class B space in Pittsburgh Central Business District, but we do have a building going up just on the fringe of what we call the Hill District, the old Civic Arena site. That's the FMB Tower, which has some public money into it, that is now finally under construction. Now, that's going to add pressure to the Pittsburgh market for office space and probably going to kick that Central Business District total vacancy rate up a little bit as firms will now have more options going forward.
Frank, great stuff as always, and I know you'll be keeping track of the vacancy rate, and our listeners can always visit our website and read more as the developments come along. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
The American Rescue Plan borrowed and spent billions, supposedly, to help the nation recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explores how well it has worked on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
The tone for historic levels of reckless spending was set early in the Biden administration. The president signing his first major piece of legislation, the American Rescue Plan Act, hereafter ARP, on March 11th, 2021, just months after he took office. It passed along party lines and by a razor-thin margin. This was nearly $2 trillion in new spending. Well, 1 year later, Americans for Prosperity is asking, are we getting our money's worth? The legislation was designed to strengthen the weak economy, end the pandemic, open schools, and to ensure COVID tests were widely available to anyone at any time. Let's start with employment and the economy. In February of 2021, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office projected that the U.S. economy would add 6.25 million jobs by the end of the year. The White House said that the American Rescue Plan would add an additional 4 million jobs for a total of 10.25 million created, despite the inclusion of $246 billion to pay people not to work. Well, instead, the economy grew by just 6.1 million jobs, fewer than if Congress had rejected the proposal. What we all know and feel is that inflation is back and seemingly here to stay. The CBO projected that inflation would rise gradually over the next few years, climbing above 2% after 2023. Economists like former Clinton-Obama official Lawrence Summers warned that the ARP could set off inflationary pressures of a kind we have not seen in a generation. And indeed, it reached 6.8% before the year was out, the highest level in nearly 40 years. Inflation is expected to remain around 7% for at least the next few months. What about the COVID tests, our promise to make readily available? the ARP provided more than $12 billion to expand coronavirus testing and help schools reopen. And the administration announced $10 billion in state testing grants immediately after it was signed. But the Food and Drug Administration delayed approval of home tests, and the White House only recently announced the purchase of 500 million tests, only a little more than one per American. As the Omicron wave passes, those tests may no longer be needed whenever they are ready. As AFP Senior Fellow of Fiscal Policy Kurt Couchman noted, wasting money has become standard procedure. Well, now it's up to each of us to bring accountability to those members who voted for this wasteful spending. We've just launched a six-figure campaign targeting lawmakers who voted for trillions of dollars in new spending and who continue to call for trillions more, despite the harm this wasteful spending has caused. We ask them to pivot and instead focus on reforms that will reduce waste, improve healthcare, and boost wages and economic growth. Two lawmakers from Pennsylvania round out the list of 13, Representative Connor Lamb from the 17th Congressional District and Representative Matt Cartwright from the 8th Congressional District. As an organization centered around action, we ask each of you listening to visit our Action Center, AmericansForProsperity.iVolunteers.com. Our gratitude abounds for your steadfast partnership in helping to transform the institution of government toward one more limited in size and scope and one more accountable to the people. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. You can find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, the premier annual grassroots conservative event, will be held April 1st and 2nd at the Penn Harris Hotel in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Fox News host, former Congressman Trey Gowdy. The conference will include forums spotlighting candidates for governor of Pennsylvania and for U.S. senator. An added feature this year is a pre-conference election integrity summit to be held on Thursday, March 31st. As always, there will be speakers, including John Gizzi of Newsmax, State Auditor General Tim DeFore, State Treasurer Stacey Garrity, and many more, along with panel presentations and workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
We'll be right back.